XP, milestone, or story-based advancement? Now, I've got a quick qualifier here just to give context. So, obviously, XP and milestone are the two written, documented, like, D&D ways of advancement. Mm-hmm. I would argue that a third exists that people tend to lump in with milestone, and that it's story, mm-hmm. because, in my opinion, milestone works in that once you hit X point in a predetermined campaign, you advance. Story leaves room to, or at least for me, story-based advancement is whatever detours you end up going on. It's not just XP that you gain by CR, but if there's a huge story moments in there, or like huge kind of character growth beats, you could use those as a level up moment for character advancement. So that's my one caveat. So XP, milestone, or story?
I'm not super into the story idea because I like to feel like there's still enough game to be played to move forward. And that feels too much like digital novels to me. Like those app-based novels where you're kind of just like, it's formatted like a choose your own adventure, but sure. You win either way.
Gotcha.
I just don't find that particularly interesting. And I don't feel like I'm offering anything to the DM or the GM as far as like crafting the gotcha. Narrative is concerned. Because it's like, okay, if they've already decided that I've succeeded in some regard just so I can get to the next chapter, I feel relatively passive. It's the same way I feel about cooperative board games in general. Like whenever I play Pandemic, there's always one person that seems to know exactly what needs to be done because they've played it all the time. Uh-huh. So you're just like, well, what's the point of right. me? I'll just watch you play then.
Fair.
So I think that's where I'm at. Okay. I don't mind milestone because I've seen it done well. And I can see where that's a little easier to manage. So, you know, if a big bad is set up and we've successfully strategized to take the, you know, the big bad down,
uh-huh.
then that's cool. And then I feel like I've accomplished something.
Sure.
Because we've actively had to work together, but we're not, you know, we're there's still enough agency there.
Yeah.
I like XP, but again, I understand that it's a lot to manage and it's hard, especially when you're just trying to get a date on the calendar to play in the first place.
Sure.
That if you can take like... Right. some of that effort out to make it easier to want to play. So I guess I'll go with milestone.
Okay. Kyle.
So I mean the first game that I ran with you guys, I tried doing XP at first and very quickly discovered that I hated it because especially when I wasn't super comfortable yet as a DM, I was like, it's just more numbers to try and crunch in here right. somewhere, right? And keep track of. And I'm like, I don't really want to spend all my time going back and figuring out what the experience rate for the monsters is.
Exactly.
And then it just like the pacing just feels off. I'm like, I'm interested in the story. I don't really give a crap about the numbers. Right. And I think we've always kind of been that way when it comes to role playing. So mm-hmm. I think it just becomes too grindy. So I kind of started leaning on milestone more, but I'm actually going to push back on your description of story, Ashley. I really like that you separate these two out though, Alan, but I would almost say that if story-based milestone or story-based leveling is going to be effective, it has to be based on what the characters are already done rather than what they're about to face.
Mm.
Right? Like I think if you're leveling based on anticipation for you where you want the characters to go, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Would be my opinion.
Yeah.
Anyway, right? Where you really need to be like when a character does something really cool that you're like, that feels like their moment, right? Like this feels like the point at which they kind of ascend to the next level. They've,
sure.
they've pushed themselves to their limit and just beyond enough that they deserve some kind of reward for that mm-hmm. kind of thing, right? And I like that kind of mentality a lot. I actually would love to see a kind of blended system, which I suppose is probably existent in a lot of more fluid and less crunchy systems, but where you're basically kind of allotting, even if you're not keeping your party all in kind of the same place, you're allotting those like growth moments based on their development in the story, right? So it becomes a very RP driven kind of advancement where it's like when your character has that moment of like I think of in Age of Ultron, right, where Hawkeye gives that whole speech to Scarlet Witch and he's like, if you go out there, you're an Avenger now, right? Mm-hmm. And then she steps out and she just goes ballistic. Like that's the kind of moment that I'm like, yes, now you just leveled up, right? You made the critical character choice to level up in this moment, right?
Sure.
And that's the kind of thing I would like more. So I think if I were doing story, that's the way I would prefer to do story, and that's the way that I would land. Milestone for me feels similar to the way you're describing story, I think.
Interesting. Where okay.
It is kind of like I feel like I've predetermined certain points in the story, right? Which I think you can do that very well, mm-hmm. right? But I think I like to develop such sandboxy types of adventures and stuff where I'm like, I know the big wheels that are turning in the universe, but I don't know what the minutia is going to be until the characters start doing things. Mm-hmm. And I don't like kind of anticipating that, right? Like, I don't want to say like, well, when they eventually come across this random beholder that I'm going to eventually railroad them towards because that's my only milestone, that's when I'll level them, right? And that I'm not as fond of.
Yeah, I totally get that. For me, like, I'll walk through these one at a time. So XP, like, it's fine. But honestly, I hate that level of advancement because it creates, if you're in a group that plays on a regular basis, it creates this weird tension that gets less fun, at least for me. Because if you miss a couple of sessions because life happens and everyone else advances, right. you're forced into this situation where characters can be several levels behind or of lesser level or lesser experience because a couple of sessions happen. A good example of this that I think back to quite a bit is Critical Role kind of campaign one. When Ashley Johnson would drop right. in and out regularly, so Pike wasn't always there because she was working, and she couldn't, she just could not make the episodes, and they were constantly doing the, well, how much XP, where's your XP at, well, you're a couple levels behind, and towards the end of campaign one, Matt had made the call that whatever level the players were at, he was going to drop Pike in one level below, which was like the beginnings of a change. And for campaign two, at least to my knowledge, he went with Milestone and just said, well, when you hit these points, then we're going to level. And yeah, I haven't heard them mention like XP and the crunchier side of character advancement at all in the we're kind of binging towards the end of campaign two. So we're at like episode 121 of the 140. Mm-hmm. And I cannot think of a single instance where they've actually done like character breakdowns and things like, well, here's the new skills that I got, or I'm now at this level. Like they just don't do it on air anymore.
Yeah.
And for me, Milestone's great, except it gets railroady and it doesn't, to me, it doesn't take into account nuances in directions or character action that are outside of the DM's plan.
I don't know. I think if you have a good DM, you have that. And this is where splitting the two is difficult because
sure.
what you two are describing with story, I've experienced with Milestone and not experienced with someone
that's fair.
DMing with story
and maybe,
based.
And maybe we're just splitting hairs, but, and you could say that like there is like Milestone done right. Does incorporate story. I think I've just seen it done. I've played in too many campaigns where you do 8 or 10 sessions mm-hmm. and you haven't leveled because you either haven't had enough experience or you haven't hit the predetermined milestone.
Okay, see, and I've had the opposite situation where we've leveled so quickly that I'm like, I feel like I'm not actually doing anything.
Sure.
Why are we at level sure. 6 already? My character hasn't even earned the power of self-respect. Ha 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 ha!
Yeah.
What prerequisite for level is that? Like, do you get that before level 3, level 5?
I feel like level 5 is a good indicator of like, okay, the group has banded together, they know each other, they've really seen some things. At this point, they've established that they are a found family. They would die for one another. But now they've got to learn, would they die for themselves? It's the die to self narrative that I'm really about here.
We might need to unpack that at a different point, but
well, yeah. I feel it explains a lot of my own trajectory. Maybe Christianity. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe someone should read their Bible.
Maybe. Hello, everyone. This is episode 190 of the Minmax podcast. Hope this finds you all well. I have 10 episodes left of my tenure in the second here round of the this, or that. Kyle, how does it feel? You're up next.
Sucker.
I feel unprepared, but that's the way I felt last time, and it all worked out. So
that's true. I also need to go through and update our rolling doc of the this, or that, because I have not done it a single time in my 50 episodes. Great. So the last one is episode 150. So I got to go back through and do a little bit of work to update that so everything is all up to date.
I feel like at this point, though, if we start repeating this, or that, it's almost okay because we've probably talked about so much that we probably will have completely different opinions.
Yeah, that's true. I think we're hitting level 5 as a podcast.
As a podcast? Only took 190 sessions.
Oh, goodness. So today we are going to continue talking about role-playing systems that aren't this here Dungeons and Dragons, but are interesting and we have had a good time with, or at least some of us have had a good time with. So Ashley, Kyle, I'm going to turn this one over to you guys because y'all have the different things that we are discussing today, and I'm going to sit back and learn because I only played one of these sessions.
That's
one of
true.
These systems.
And as we talked about it this morning over coffee, it's clear you remembered F all about it.
Nope. I remember very, very little. I remember one of them is a D6, and that's about all I got.
And it's not even a traditional D6.
No, it's not. It has its own
special
dice.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Alan, I haven't actually played the game that I'm going to talk about either. I'm just really excited.
Okay, well, that does make me feel a little bit better. Kyle, you want to take us away with your system?
Oh, snap, I'm going first? Okay, I'm totally prepared then. yes, so actually, this is a system that both Grant and I, Grant Lowe, who was on a few episodes ago, and I have been super excited about, because it was announced, I want to say, or at least he told me about it probably tail end of last year. And it was just released back in April. And I haven't had a chance with summer being summer to really go super deep into it or play with it yet, but it is called Anemone Story by Zach Baru. I would assume his last name is pronounced Zach. I'm sorry if I completely butchered that, but it's basically a role-playing game that's designed to emulate like your classic kids with monster companions type of storytelling, right? So it's the Digimon, it's the Pokemon, yokai, you know, all of those kinds of things. So so as a diehard fan of both Pokemon and Digimon growing up, I was super excited about this. And the timing was also really great because they've been doing a reboot of the original Digimon series that Grant and I have also been nerding out about for the last several months. So it's just kind of all coming together. And now all I want to do is run an Anemone Story campaign. So in terms of kind of the general mechanics and texture of the game, it's very similar to a lot of the games we've described. It's a D6 system. Runs, I mean, for your guys' benefit, very similarly to Lady Blackbird, where you just have you know, a pool of D6s, and then, you know, you add to it based on your character's talents and things and abilities, and then you roll, and anything that's 4+ is a success. If it's below 4, then it counts as a failure, right? And the GM just sets the difficulty between 1 and 5 to determine how difficult the task is. So generally speaking, most of the kind of core components of the game are similar to some of the other games we described. You know, again, your kids, your kid character has three main traits, which are logic, reflex, and spirit. So, you know, they're brainy, they're physical, or they're kind of wise. Spiritual, emotional, you know, wise. Yeah, that's probably the best description for it. So so basically, when you're creating your character, you put a 2 in one of those stats, a 3 in one of those stats, and a 4 in one of those stats. So you always have like a strong, a medium, and a weak stat. And I think if I remember right, those basically don't change in the game. You can get little like boosts to them and that kind of thing, but generally speaking, they don't change much. And then so you pick a kid type, which is, I guess, basically like the equivalent of your class. But it's really basically just meant to be kind of like the classic sort of stereotypical, like, which kind of kid are you in this game? So the different kid types are the bookworm, the computer wizard, the delinquent, free spirit, gamer, gentle heart, jock, little kid, loner, rising star. And then he actually came out with like a bonus content thing shortly after the game came out with Shutterbug as another character option. So
dibs.
So I was just going to say, suddenly Alan's paying attention.
Yeah, right. I was going to say that's Alan's thing. So you basically pick which type of kid you are. It gives you an ability that's basically just like, okay, you get boosts in certain circumstances, right? Which would make sense for whatever your specific kid type is. So obviously the computer wizards, like if you're dealing with technology, you get a little bump to technology roles and that kind of thing. So then you have, you know, you kind of determine your traits and stuff, most of which don't have a lot of impact mechanically on the game. It's very similar to D&D in terms of you pick a virtue, a desire, and a flaw. So, you know, what does your kid like really stand for? What's their kind of guiding light virtue? What's their major flaw? And then what do they want? They also all get a special item. So everybody has like their ridiculous, like, I have a yo-yo. A yo-yo is my special item. It's like their comfort blanket kind of thing, right?
Okay.
And then they all have a talent that kind of goes along with their kid type, but it can be basically whatever you want it to be. So the kids piece is pretty straightforward. It's the Animon piece where things get really convoluted very quickly.
Okay.
So in addition to having, you know, your kid, obviously your kid has a partner Animon, just like they do in like Digimon or Pokemon or that kind of thing. I will say, and I should have led with this more, based on my reading of it and my understanding, it is very, very, very much more based on like Digimon than it is on Pokemon. You're not going out like collecting additional Animon, although I suppose you could play it that way, but I don't know how that would work. Mm-hmm. So it is very Digimon-esque in a lot of ways, which I love because I think Digimon's better anyway. But so your Animon, you start off with like your very basic stage, right? And they can go through evolution as a part of the game. They have their own series of stats. Their kind of combat pieces are a lot more complicated because he ties in a lot more of like the strategic kind of like playing the Pokemon games, right? Where you have different types and type advantages between your Animon and their attacks, different kind of core types of Digimon. So you can have like of Animon. I'm going to do that 100 times probably. So you might have like a bird type Animon or a mechanical type Animon. I'm forgetting what all the different types are, but you determine your Animon's type, the type of their attack, what their like signature attack is, and then you can develop like all of their evolutions and stuff. So I think the key thing that I really am excited about with this game that I think differentiates it from most role-playing games is the mechanics of the dynamic between the kid and your Animon, because that's really like the core of stories like this, right? Is it's all about a kid developing a bond with this monster. And then because of their bond, the monster is able to achieve like higher levels. They grow as people / monsters, okay, you know, kind of thing. Like that's the heart of the story, really. Sure. Right. So one of the key mechanics in the game is your bond. So your bond level, you can use bond points. You get like a starting pool of bond points, and you can use those to like reroll in clutch moments or you know, do like specific actions in combat and stuff like that. Use your Animon's special attack in extra time, you know, different things like that. So you can spend them, but your bond also becomes something of a liability, because if your character gets in a really stressful situation, or if you push, so if you fail a roll, you can push, and if you fail again, you can use bond points to like to continue pushing past it. But if you do that, it gives you what's called bond strain, and basically that like it's like tension between the relationship,
sure,
and the relationship between your kid and their Animon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really interesting, because then that affects how they are able to work mechanically, and how effective they are in combat and things like that. And if you hit a certain point in your bond stress, you actually do what's called a bond break episode. So I don't know if you guys remember the super classic Pokemon episode where Ash like has this whole thing where he decides that he's like not good enough for Pikachu, and then tries to like abandon Pikachu, and Pikachu finds a whole bunch of other Pikachus.
Yeah.
And then he like leaves, and it's like super sad, and yes, you think he's just going to straight up abandon Pikachu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be, I would say, like a bond break episode, right? Where it's okay, like the tension in our relationship is too much.
Yeah.
We don't want to have anything to do with each other anymore. And so you go through it. It basically is like a mechanically driven RP moment where it's like, nope, the strain between you and your Animon has become too much, and now you have to deal with that because you've been pushing them too hard or that kind of
thing. Got it.
Which is actually something that Digimon does a lot, and I think Digimon tends to do really well, because the bond between a tamer, I guess is typically the term, and their Digimon tends to be like the core component of their abilities and things like that. So like in the original series of Digimon, all of the kids had a crest, which would in this game correspond to their virtue, I would say. And so like Tai Chi's crest is the crest of courage, right? So when he shows a deep understanding of courage and he's being courageous, that's what allows Agumon to digievolve to the next level, right? And so that's emulated very well in this game, where it's like the more your character shows them leaning into those specific things, the higher their Animon is able to evolve to.
Got it.
As I was looking through it, I think one of my favorite things about the game, one of my favorite components that I'm seeing is what's called the critical gauge. So when you're in combat, you have a critical gauge, and like every time somebody rolls a 6 in combat, you add to the critical gauge. And once it hits a certain point, you can have like an epic level moment where you can like reduce everybody's bond strain or give it back everybody their bond points, or you can have everybody's Animon evolve at the same time, kind of thing.
Oh, dang.
So it really captures that moment of like, oh, the chips are down, we're getting the crap kicked out of us, and now like, and now we pull through and we have that epic like everybody evolves at the same time and we're prepared for it, right? So
nice.
It's just like, from what I'm seeing, I haven't had a chance to play it yet, like I said, but it seems to capture the feel of that type of storytelling so well, and I'm so excited to be able to tinker with that.
It sounds like the Megazord moment for Power Rangers.
It does.
Just like everyone jumps in and suddenly like, we cannot defeat this. The big baddie is now 10 stories tall. Now we have to work together. Let's go.
Right, exactly.
So then just for clarification for myself, because I've never played any character ever that had anything even so much as like a familiar, who makes the decisions for the Animon?
That's an excellent question. So I if I'm remembering right, it's been a while since I've read this part, but if I'm remembering right, he's kind of like, well, you can kind of, you know, decide with the GM how you want to do it.
Okay.
My inclination, and I think his suggestion, is have the GM control the Animon, because again, a huge part of the story is the relationship between your character and their Animon. So I feel like it's hard to I mean, A, you can't really have conversations with yourself, right? It's that DM
right.
moment of like, oh, I have these two NPCs talking to each other now. Why did I do this? You know?
Yep.
Which I definitely have never done every time I've run a session. and so, I mean, essentially, it would want the DM to be the one controlling that, because that's so much of the core aspect of the storytelling is having different personalities between your player character and your character's Animon, and you know, being able to create tension in that narrative, and especially for like a Bond break episode, you need to be able to have like a really tense fight, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Like you and your partner are hashing it out now. So yeah, no, it again, it all feels just very on point for having the mechanics line up with the type of storytelling that it's trying to do. The only thing that I think is a little challenging about that is it does have to be a little grindier, okay, in order to make that work, right? So like when you're in combat, like type advantage matters, right? So just like with Pokemon, fire attacks are good against grass types, yeah, right? And that kind of thing. So that adds a layer. I feel like if it's a type of mechanic that you're comfortable with, like if you're someone who has played Pokemon games or Digimon games over the years, and you're comfortable with how type matchups work and things like that, you would probably be able to run it fairly fluidly and without giving it too much extra thought. But it is something that I think will contribute, especially during combat, to things getting a little bit more intensive in terms of having to use the mechanics and stuff. Outside of combat, it doesn't seem too mechanically heavy. It's just because of those like special components that really help flesh out that relational component between the kid and their Animon that make it a little bit more involved.
Sure. And do they just, is it a D20 system or is it?
D6.
D6.
So it's a pool of D6s. Yeah.
Thank you.
So for
that's
any,
right, you said that.
Yeah. For any check, you're basically like, okay, if I'm using, say, logic and I have a skill of 3 in logic or 3 points of logic, then I would assemble a pool of 3 dice. And then if I have a relevant talent, I would get extra dice. And then you have setback and boost also, which are basically kind of like disadvantage and advantage, where if you have a setback, then only 5 and up counts as a success, and a boost, a 3 and up counts as a success. So the GM can basically decide like, oh, you can do this, but you know, you're stuck in the mud while you're trying to, I don't know, fight this thing.
Sure.
Right? So you have a setback in this case.
Okay. Is it just me, or do I always feel like there's a learning curve when transitioning between two D20 and D6 systems? I always feel like 100%. I'm very slow to adopt and understand how to calculate things when I have to flip between the two. Especially with D6, I'm like, wait, there are too many dice in my hand.
Honestly, I think that's because a lot of the times, especially with D6 systems, at least from some of the systems that we've run, like the Star Wars RPG, Fates, which we'll get to in a minute, they use a D6 sided die.
Well, for those specific systems, yeah.
Sometimes they'll use different symbols on the die, so then it makes it extra complicated instead of just saying, okay, evens are this, odds are this, or 1 to 3 is this, 4 to 6 is this.
Sure.
They try to overcomplicate it or get you to buy
additional
dice.
I was going to say, let's be clear on what they're doing. They're making their special dice, so then you have to buy their special dice.
Yeah, buy their special dice. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is 100% a merchandise grab. But yeah.
And who can blame them, truly? Especially if they're a smaller publishing company.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Like, there's reasons why you do that. And especially if you think, like, an example on this one could be, because we can cover this in a whole nother episode, and we're going to have Paige and Grant back on for this. Like, we jumped in and backed the Avatar RPG.
I'm so excited.
And they've just broke $6 million in funding. So everything they've imagined is going to happen. They could 100% introduce their own unique dice system, like a D22.
Yep.
And everyone would just be like,
I would just eat it up.
Let's go.
Yep.
Like they could literally just make a fired, like, earth, water, fire, air dice.
I'm
and
surprised
you have
I haven't, though. I don't know
four,
how you have air dice.
You have to have 4. They're clear. They're clear with,
but then
like,
what's water?
Blue. They're
and
blue.
Hollow.
With other.
With clear? I don't understand.
With,
exactly.
With liquid
you
inside.
See how it goes?
Like they're actually liquid filled dice.
See, that I'm cool with.
But yeah.
Which,
like,
you'd have to do very carefully to not throw the balance off, I feel like.
But like, yeah, in those cases, like with that, like, they could 100% do it, and all of us would be like, shut up and take my money. Just like, just do it.
I've been so excited about this system that I've I've been talking about it with people who have never touched a tabletop role-playing game in their life or have never seen Avatar in their life. And I'm like, can you watch it so then you can play with us? Because I feel like...
Right.
So I've been just pitching Avatar to people. Yep,
I have too. It's... Yeah, so we jumped in. And so, like, we'll have the core rule books and the PDFs for it. So it's like, we're just like... And we're going to be playing this with all of our friends, and it is going to be
whether
fun.
They want to or not, they'll play it once.
You will be forced.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a whole episode on that once we get it, or once we get access to the PDFs once they're released, because that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be good.
No kidding.
But no, the companion relationship in Anemon, like, that is really compelling to me. Like,
is it?
Oh yeah, like,
why?
The idea, like, I think I am of an age where the animal companion relationship, there were so many cartoons mm-hmm. that built on that, and there were so many things, like, because I watched the first season or two of Digimon. I watched more Digimon than I did actually Pokemon back in the day, and so, like, that whole thing of having a friend that is alongside of you that is growing with you and doesn't judge you as a
things.
Right, exactly. I was going there. As a kid who felt super lonely growing
imagine
up.
Imagine having a lifelong companion that doesn't judge you.
I guess.
Wonder where I could find one of those. Stares at wife.
It's a mystery.
It's not what I meant. I'm sorry. I realize how that came out of my mouth now, and I regret some things.
Someone who is helpful and supportive. Maybe does some chores around the house.
This was growing up, Ashley. He's not talking about now.
Thanks, Kyle. Thank you for the moral support. Throws eyes at Ashley.
Marry Kyle then.
I mean, we pretty much are already. But no, like, as a preteen, like, feeling like every preteen does, like, isolated, like, no one in the world understands you.
Sure.
And also not having pets growing up. Like, our only pets were, like, rabbits that lives outside in a hutch, or hamsters that lived in a like converted fish tank.
Sure.
Never having like the animal experience of someone who would just cuddle you, or like you could pick up a cat and just cuddle it, and sure. It like getting that sort of physical affection reaffirmment or
affirmation.
Thank you. The idea of a Digimon type character was always super appealing. So reliving some of that angst would be very, very fun. Ashley's quietly crying behind the microphone of laughter.
She's just having to swallow a lot more jokes. That's fine. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I guess, I mean, like, I love animals. I think they're super cool, but I really liked Pokemon growing up. I thought it was a cool game. Like, I don't know why I'm not more compelled by the idea of having, like, a familiar. The only familiars I've ever been kind of interested in were the ones that that are in His Dark Materials.
Sure.
And I think that's because it has, like, that really sort of complex theological element to it.
Sure.
But everything else, I'm just like, yeah, you're my buddy. You can't really understand me in a deep way because we're different species. But yeah, we're buddies. I just can't. It's not.
See, and that's where I would say Digimon differs substantially from Pokemon.
Okay, like, can you explain
like Digimon?
Because I think I never watched Digimon growing up, so I'm always going to be functioning from a place of misunderstanding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like I said, the game is very much, Anemon Story specifically, I mean, is very much more Digimon-oriented than it is Pokemon-oriented.
Sure.
Whereas Pokemon is a little more abstract in terms of the relationship, and I would honestly say very poorly thought out, because I still, and don't get me wrong, I love Pokemon, but I still don't get the point of why they're catching all these monsters just so they can fight each other. Like, there's no real ends to that, you know?
Right.
Whereas when you're talking about Digimon, like, A, Digimon can talk, so they can actually have, like, real conversations with their partners. It's not just, like,
okay,
pika pika, you know?
Yeah.
So like, they actually have like genuine conversations.
What now?
Right, right. No, so it's completely different. And again, just using the original Digimon series as a template, there's this sense of, for Digimon, there's this sense of calling, like very much in the first season. A lot of the Digimon partners describe this like sense of longing and this sense of waiting for their partner to arrive, and then the kids all show up in the digital world, and it's like this sense of fulfillment, right? Like, you're the person that I was destined to be with all along, kind of thing, right? Okay. And so it forms this kind of immediate bond around that kind of idea. And then truly, the Digimon's faithfulness to their partner and kind of their partner's fidelity to that is why and how Digimon are able to grow, right?
Okay.
So in the series, like, Digimon are only able to digivolve when their partner is in danger, generally, or when their partner's belief in them or belief in themselves grows strong enough, right?
Okay.
And usually it's all of the above. So so I'll give you some examples of how this plays out in the original Digimon series. So one of my favorite episodes is Werguruman's Diner, because it's a werewolf Digimon, so of course. And so the main character is Matt or Yamato, depending on whether or not you're watching the Japanese or the English. And so his crest is the crest of friendship, right?
Okay.
So all throughout the series, he's very much a lone wolf kind of character. Therefore, very fitting that his Digimon is a wolf-based Digimon. And so he's very much like, nope, I have to, you know, I go my own way. I do my own thing. I think I know and understand how things should be done. But he also has a younger brother who he's very protective of, who's there in the digital world with him. And so that kind of becomes like a point of reflection for him throughout the series. And in Werguruman's Diner, basically what happens is the whole group of kids gets separated, and then Joe ends up stuck in this diner where one of the evil Digimon just keeps screwing things up, so that he eats a meal at this diner and then doesn't have any money to pay for it. So the diner's owner makes him work off the debt, basically. But then this evil Digimon keeps messing with him, so he keeps like accidentally dropping the stack of plates that he was washing and shattering them. And then the diner owner keeps like, nope, that's 3 more weeks of work that you have to do to pay for all of that you messed up, right? And so Matt comes along and finds Joe in this position, and then is like, well, I'll help you out. You know, I'll help you work off the debt. We'll get you out of here. Well, then Matt doesn't know that Joe keeps getting messed with, and so he thinks Joe just keeps screwing up on purpose, right?
Hmm.
And so basically what it boils down to is when Matt finally realizes that it doesn't matter whether or not Joe is screwing up and he's there to help him out just because he's his friend, like, that's what allows Gabumon to digivolve to the next level, right? Is they realize that, and then they end up fighting the diner owner, who's just a big jerk anyway,
yeah,
and defeating him, kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's the kind of relationship that they have. Or an even better one would be between Tai and Agumon, who's kind of the central character. So Tai's crest, I think I've already said, is the crest of courage. And so he basically, when he discovers that he has the crest and he has this ability to like help Agumon become more powerful, he pushes Agumon really, really hard and tries to force him to eat a ton so he has enough energy, and then like tries to put himself and Agumon in danger, like very much on purpose. So it's very much that overbalance of like being courageous to the point of being reckless and stupid. And then what happens is he actually makes Agumon like dark digivolve into like a crazy version, and then that crazy version like attacks them and like destroys the whole place that they're in and stuff. And so Tai has to go through this whole process of like, oh, that's not what courage actually means.
Mm.
And then later when they're facing like really intense odds and things are going really poorly, he actually demonstrates what real courage is and like steps in and is prepared to throw himself into the fight when nobody else is able to, kind of thing. And then that's when Agumon is actually able to digivolve to the next level.
Okay.
So that's the type of relationship dynamic that you see in Digimon specifically, but also like what I think he's trying to emulate in this game as well.
Got it. Okay. That's really helpful. So then question, when these kids, do you ever get a plot in Digimon where the kids grow up and are adults? And like, do you ever see adults with Digimon apart from that weird diner owner?
Yes and no. So in the first two series, so you have the original series and then the Adventure 02, which is basically like a sequel series.
Okay.
All of the other Digimon series are just completely disconnected from the original ones. But basically what happens is you have the original 8 Digidestined kids in the first series, and they're all kids. And then in the second series, you have a slightly different group of kids, but the two kids who are like the little kids in the first one, being Matt's little brother, TK, and then Ty's little sister, Kari, mm-hmm. are older. They're like, you know, 10, 11 years old, and they're kind of helping lead this new group of kids. But then those older kids who are the original Digidestined are still around. They're like teenagers at that point. So they haven't seen their Digimon, because at the end of every Digimon series, basically what happens is the kids get separated from their Digimon. Like the Digimon have to stay in the digital world and the kids have to go back. So there's a very strong theme throughout of that kind of loss of childhood, right? Like of the very much like a Toy Story 3, having to give up your toys to go to college, right?
Yeah.
There's a very strong tone of that in the end of every Digimon series, where they're basically like, oh, we have to kind of give up our childhood now. We have to move on from that. So it's actually really cool, because then those older kids, the original Digidestined, do come back and they get to meet back up with their partner after years of being apart. And then there's this whole like saving the world. Like there's always a saving the world dynamic to this, sure. too. Like they're always moving towards something, right? Like the evil Digimon are trying to destroy either the human world or the digital world or both in most cases,
mm-hmm.
you know, so there's that piece as well. In Digimon Savers, it would be the fifth series that they ever did. The entire premise of the show is a little bit different, where it's basically a group, an organization called DATS, whose whole goal is to, protect the world from Digimon who just keep randomly manifesting in the real world. So they basically like go track down these Digimon as they're popping up in the real world and like capture them and send them back to the digital world. And in that series, you do have several adults who have Digimon partners, but typically in most cases, it's always kids with Digimon partners. And again, that key theme of like, oh, you have to give them up. You have to kind of let go of your childhood at some point.
Sure.
Is a key part of it.
And forgive me if you've already covered this, but what makes a Digimon evil apart from actions? Like, is there any sort of like corruption scheme where, say, in the lieu of this game, something could happen where your Animon goes rogue or
breaks bad?
Yeah. Starts cooking
meth. You certainly could do it as a story. I don't remember. I don't remember seeing anything that's like designed for that, but I feel like there's plenty of room where you could play with that, like especially sure. after a Bond break episode and have them sure. like be separated for a time, which is a theme that Digimon plays with a lot too, where there are times where kids are separated from their partners. I think that would be a very fertile and compelling story area to take the game from time to time.
Okay, cool. I was just curious. I didn't know how, because I know sometimes anime can set up this world building, but not go super deep with it. And I have a habit right. of overthinking things. So I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really, really hard because your kid can't really fight in the same way that an Animon can, right? Because, I mean, you're talking about like lasers and blasters and like elemental energy flying all over the place, and your kid is just a kid. Like they don't have superpowers or any crazy abilities. They're just a kid, and right. so you can't like. Granted, I mean, again, in the series, like how many times does Ash get electrocuted? When depending on the voltage of that, should probably have killed him multiple times
exactly.
over, right? So there's some silly cartoon flexibility there, but yeah. generally speaking, you know, they can't fight in the same way. Although there is very much the strong component of kids always fighting alongside their partners in that, which again sets up plenty of instances where you're like, you should probably be dead, but we're just going to suspend disbelief on that one because it's fun.
Right. Well, and I guess narratively speaking, I'm very curious about this concept of destiny. Cause you'd mentioned, you know, like these Animon, they're waiting for their partners. They're destined to be with these specific kids, whatever. So then, that would suggest, I would think, and please correct me if my thinking is wrong in this, that if there are evil Animon, that then there are evil people destined to be partnered with them. And I find that idea, that duality of destiny, kind of interesting in the sense of like, oh, so then there's, then evil has a claim on destiny as well. That's, how do you work with that narratively?
Yeah, so actually the second season of the original series does play with that a little bit.
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily correlate that all Digimon would have a partner.
Okay.
In the original series, it's just like these specific kids with these specific Digimon as partners. But in the second series, one of the kids actually, or like the main plot for like the first half of the season, is the kids are fighting against this guy who has set himself up as the Digimon Emperor. Who is basically like enslaved Digimon and is using them to take over the digital world because he thinks the whole thing is a game. He doesn't realize like these are like living creatures in another world.
Okay.
Because you know, that relationship of digital space to real space, the entire premise of Digimon is all of our technology has created like all of the leftover data that didn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah.
Just disappeared out into the ether and it became the digital world. And that's something that they play around with a lot too.
And thus Bitcoin was created.
You're right.
That's where all those lost emails went.
Right? They're all now Digimon.
Gotta take back some words then.
Yeah,
maybe
right?
That's how the evil Digimon were created. They read too much spam mail.
Right? Yup. So yeah, but no, the second season does play with that, and there's this whole redemption arc for this character as he realizes what he's done, and then really played because he is a digi-destined, so he is destined to be a part of this group of kids who's supposed to save the digital world.
Okay.
But he doesn't realize what he's doing and is corrupted, kind of thing. And there are also a lot of other instances where they play around with things like that, where Digimon like are able to take over humans or kind of possess humans in a way, or convince humans to do certain things. That's a big thing that they play around in Savers. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of components of that come up as well.
Okay. Huh. Okay. Well, I'm more compelled than I had been. I'll be honest. I was never all that curious about Digimon, and now I'm like, all right, you have my attention.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I feel like that would be a lot of fun, especially like there's some people in like our podcast community, like Paige and Grant. That would be so much fun to play with them, because having role played with them some, there's going to be some ridiculous antics that ensue. That could be a lot of fun.
Would it be so much fun?
It would be fun.
I feel like one of the things that would be interesting is just the fact that you're all role playing as kids. Right? Like, I feel like I work with kids every day, but as I've looked over this game, I've tried to think about adapting my role playing to being a kid. And I feel like that would be a really unique challenge and lead to some really fun role playing as we all just like lean into what kind of little kid would we be here?
Yeah. How do twins work?
That's a good question.
I don't know, but I want to see you guys play that. Like, I don't know why. I think it's because in some ways, personality-wise, you guys are so similar. And then in stark areas, you are 100% polar opposites, very much in how siblings connect.
Uh-huh.
So you role-playing as characters that would have to deal with that on a regular basis would be hysterical.
Well, I'd just be curious to see what the Animon come out as. Like,
right?
Kyle's already claimed anything that's wolf-like. I don't know what the sort of equal and opposite reaction to that would be.
See, if this is
a mollusk?
I was going to say, in a Pokemon form, this is easy. Psyduck. Like, Psyduck is the exact... Like, let's be real honest. If Wiz was Pokemon, you would have Psyduck.
I always feel bad for him. He's got migraines.
Yes, I know. Like, Psyduck is, like, he's a tragic character. But I think in an equal and opposite sense, that's about as far from a wolf as you can get. Platypus duck.
Fair.
Oh, gosh.
See, honestly, I think we were going to cover two different systems today, but we're already close to the hour mark. I say we save Fate for the next one.
Yeah, that's good.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Well, guys, if you want to hear more about Animon, or if you want to hear, yeah, if you want to chime in and just talk about like your thoughts on this system, if you watch Digimon, if you're a fan of that, love to hear from you. MinMaxPod@gmail.com, MinMaxPod on all the socials except Reddit, /u/MinMaxPodcast, 7373-789-9369 for the voicemail number is the voicemail number for voicemails 3 minutes or less. Anything longer than that, you can send the audio file to our email address. I'm at Alan H. Mowers on Twitter. Ashley's at DEEDEE_K. Kyle is at Stainbrook Kyle. You can find links to our Patreon account and the listener survey at the top of the show notes in all of the podcast apps that you use. You can find us anywhere. If you guys haven't already, go ahead and give us a like rating and review over on iTunes. We're sitting at 21 right now. And if my memory serves, we are 9 away from me doing a stupid hot wing chicken challenge to where we'll do basically a Hot Ones episode where Ashley and Kyle get to ask me questions and I get to answer them while eating super stupid hot chicken. So it's ridiculous, but it's fun. And yeah, that just helps everyone else get to see the show. And if you, another thing you guys could do is if you like the type of things that we do and you know somebody that you think, hey, I know someone who is this level of nerdy that might enjoy this, go ahead and give it a share. We always like having new people to come in, come find us and enjoy us and enjoy hanging out with us and doing all of our stupid activities for more people.
Yeah, popularity is a fun concept.
Yeah. Until
apparently Alan missed that boat in middle school.
Well, we both did. So I'm with you, Alan. I feel your pain.
Thank you, Kyle. Miss Popular over here.
Excuse me.
I hear you.
I was not popular in school. I just don't bitch about it as much as you do.
On that note, bye, Mampersands.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sorry, Alan. I got a feeling for you today.